This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 188. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
020-8816-7691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Berners. Hello, Garrus. Hello, Berners. Another week has passed us by.
Coach.
Yeah, certainly have.
Another one looms before us. What's been going on in the world of Berners and Garrus?
Been busy, Coach. Busy. Just plotting and planning. I'm heading out to Mumbai next Monday. Mm-hmm. So I've got a few bits and pieces out there. It's all going to be Pitch Vision 1, seeing some academies. Also going to catch up with Mr. Tendulkar, actually, and his family after them visiting Ealing. So I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, that's splendid.
Just dropping that into the conversation.
Just thought I would.
Why not? As if you wouldn't do that. Jeepers. So you're a very lucky boy, mate.
Yeah, I'm actually going out with some other guys from the Ealing Cricket Club who looked after his son during the... during the off season, so we're looking forward to going out there and seeing a bit of what Mumbai's got to offer. So it's the guys from PPM Coaching, actually, Chris Peplow, ex Middlesex, left arm spinner. He's been on the podcast a couple of times, actually.
Friend of the show.
So he's going out. They're just launching their coaching business, and they're going to look at how the guys out there go about, you know, doing things from both a cricketing perspective and a business perspective, and. Bit of a fact-finding mission with some other pleasures, hopefully, along the way.
Well, I've been set a challenge for the coming British winter and summer to follow, which is I'm taking over at a rep level under 11s. So that's going to be a fun few months coming up to see how we can help those talented youngsters improve themselves over the next few weeks.
Yeah, very good, mate. Congratulations on that. That'd be a good coaching experience for you, definitely.
Exactly, a new experience. I've not worked with that age group before, so it'll be interesting to see how things work. What's your top tip on working with under 11s, Garrus?
I think the same things apply across the board. I think the crucial difference when you're coaching different age groups is the language patterns that you use, and obviously the descriptive nature of what you're doing becomes slightly different to working with somebody who's, you know, scored hundreds in test match cricket. But the actual principles of cricket are exactly the same whether you're 11 or whether you're 34 and playing at the top level.
Yeah, exactly. And I've already been given a word of warning that you have to be just as competent at dealing with parents as you do with the children themselves. So that will be an interesting challenge for me as well. So we've got an interview this week, so we're not going to spend a lot of time chatting. We're going to head straight into the yes no round, and yeah. And then we are going to have the interview and then do our questions. So Berners, every week we have a yes no round, which is a chance to just say yes or no to the three questions that have been posed this week to both us and the community, even if we want to say more. So, Berners, you've got the questions and you've also got the community opinion on each one of the three. So fire away.
Question one. Knowing how to coach is better than knowing what to coach.
Yes.
Yes.
Poll result, 52% no. Question two, UDRS should be adapted to also check for illegal bowling.
No.
No.
Poll results, 77% yes. Question three, most club fast bowlers can reduce their run-up.
Yes.
No.
Whopping 85% yes from the poll.
Yeah. Some interesting ones this week. But we're moving on, and this week we have Martin Gleeson returning from Cricket India Academy, cricketindiaacademy.com, and he's normally our Indian correspondent, but he's branched out, he's moved out to Afghanistan, and he's managed to catch up with no less than MCC President Philip Hodgson. So without further ado, we'll head over to Cabourg and we'll find out some opinions from Martin and from Philip.
I'm here with MCC President Philip Hodgson, who's arrived in from London into Kabul, spent the last few days here. Welcome, Philip. This is your first trip into Afghanistan. What have been your thoughts?
Well, it's very interesting because, of course, very few people in England want to come to Afghanistan. So I found it very exciting. I wanted to come because of our connection with Afghan connection, Sarah Fain, all the good work she's doing, building schools and putting cricket pitches in Afghanistan. So first thoughts are that I found Kabul extremely interesting, very similar to where I've been recently in Colombo. The traffic's awful, but it's normal society as much as I can see, except there's a few guns around the place. That's my first thought.
And what's been the purpose of your visit this time?
Coming to Kabul allowed me to see you and Adesh coaching the coaches at the Kabul Stadium. It allowed me to see a match at the Kabul Stadium with the youngsters, and it also allowed me to see a girls' camp. Obviously, there have been boys' camps, and now to see a girls' camp that was very exciting today. So the whole point was to come out and see where is our money going, but more particularly, what is happening in Kabul, what's happening in Afghanistan.
And is this a new initiative from the MCC to be involved here in Afghanistan, or is this part of an ongoing process?
Well, hopefully it's part of an ongoing process. It's gone on with Afghan Connection for about 5 years. We have two overseas projects. One is here, where we support Afghan Connection. And now, after my meetings with the Afghan Cricket Board, we will link with them and help them take cricket to schools and clubs and build up the infrastructure. I think there's an understanding in Afghanistan that it will take a lot longer than perhaps some of the people watching television think they're going to beat Australia in a test match. That isn't going to happen for a long time, but what they've done in 8 years is quite remarkable. The other project we have is in Sri Lanka, where we support the Foundation of Goodness at Sinagama. We've put a lot of money into there post the tsunami, and that's very worthwhile. And that again is not just a cricket program, it's a bit like Afghanistan. There's a sustainable program that involves crocheting, IT, medical centre under the wonderful inspired leadership of Kushal Gunasekara. So I suppose we've backed two individuals, MCC. We've backed Kushal in Sri Lanka and we've backed Sarah Fain in Afghanistan. What we need to do is widen both those projects. In Sri Lanka, we might widen it to take into account the northern part of Sri Lanka. And here, I think we have to get involved with the whole holistic development of cricket in Afghanistan.
Have you been happy with the progress of what's been done here with the funding that the MCC has provided?
Oh, absolutely. It's been fantastic. I think we've just helped a little bit. I think the people on the ground, people like yourself who've been coaching here for a couple of years, and people like Sarah who've been here for some time, have done a fantastic job. But the reception from the Afghan kids and from the Afghan cricketers has also been quite remarkable. There's a warmth that you perhaps wouldn't get anywhere else in the world. So yes, I think it's money well spent.
You've had some meetings with the Afghanistan Cricket Board as well. You've been comfortable with those, and what do you think will be the outcomes of that?
I think that's interesting. They've got a new chairman who's very high in the government and an advisor of Karzai. I think that's a positive step because cricket obviously is very important. When it becomes important in Afghanistan, obviously the politicians want to know about it. But I think he seems a very sound, straight bloke. They're changing their CEO at the moment. There's a lot going on, but all the evidence is that they're changing for the better. They want close links with MCC, and I think we owe it to them to try and support one or two projects and see how they go over the next 2 or 3 years.
And from a grassroots level, that money's been spent on the coach development and from the teachers and from some of the girls involved. What's been the response and the feedback from them?
Well, as you know, you were there yesterday when I asked a lot of the teachers that you were coaching. It's so vital. The response has been positive from them. They obviously love the way that cricket has developed. To a lot of them, as you know, it's new. Mm. But they've seen it on television. It seems to be the major sport now. They're inspired by it. They've got heroes. But as you know, the key is getting the teachers trained so that develops cricket in the schools. Coaching the coaches, you're dealing with level one at the moment. As you said about 2 or 3 hours ago, sometimes level one is a bit too far for them. But I think if you think about the work you might do over the next 5 years, you will get a certain number of level three or four coaches all being well. Then you have hopefully a lot of level one and two coaches. And that's going to be the secret of success in Afghanistan. Because the real secret is going to be that they develop cricket in the schools, boys and girls, and that then clubs develop. And from the clubs, you have the regional tournament. And from the regional tournament, you have the national side. At the moment, they've sort of jumped all these hurdles. They produce some wonderful Pushtun cricketers, mainly Pushtun, from their times in the Pakistani camps. And of course, they've been competing on this worldwide stage. Now I think realism should sink in, and this might be a 15, 20, 25 year program to build cricket as it built up in India and Pakistan all those years ago. This is a part of the world where they embrace cricket.
And do you think that infrastructure is obtainable, and how long do you think it'll be before Afghanistan start to beat the likes of the Indias and the Pakistans and the Sri Lankas, which is a fairly common focus here? Do you think that's an achievable target?
I think if stability reigns in Afghanistan, and that's a big question mark, obviously, if it Kabul is obviously going through a very positive change at the moment. There's lots of people, lots of trading going on. There's a dynamic in Kabul, probably the same in Jalalabad. What we need to see is that widen through the country. If you get that structure of schools and clubs and you have stability, you might not get stability around the whole country. That might not matter, but you need majority stability. I think then cricket over the next 5, 10, 15 years will be very meaningful in this country. As far as beating Sri Lanka, Australia, England, India, Pakistan, I think that's a bit irrelevant, but I'll answer your question. I think it is possible at 2020 cricket. I think the longer form of game will take much longer, and you know that. It'll be very, very difficult because cricket's been enshrined in England and Australia for 300 and 200 years almost respectively, or certainly 150 years in Australia, and therefore you're competing with that whole history of development. And, you know, to say that really in Afghanistan cricket's grown in 8 years, I think the level of expectation is very important. If it gets too high, it will be to the detriment of cricket. They're all watching it on television now, and they all get disappointed when Afghanistan loses to England or loses to India. It's to be expected. But it's quite feasible, as Ireland have shown, that they could make inroads at 2020 cricket. And that should then inspire them to do better at 50-over cricket and eventually, whatever the time frame is, at Test cricket. There's no reason, because these people, as you know, as a coach, Martin, are naturally athletic. You watch them field, you watch them throw, you watch them bowl, you watch them hit a ball. They have a lot more talent, perhaps, than the natural English and Australian lad at the same age. They just need it channeling.
I think that's a very common sense approach to the future, and certainly my couple of days here have been very eye-opening and have seen some great things, and I'm sure I speak on behalf of the coaches and the teachers I've been working with that are extremely grateful for your support and for what the MCC is doing here. And it's great to see it actually making a difference, and it's pleasing to see that when you've come in, you've actually been able to see what is being done, knowing that that money's been spent in the right places and we're getting some good outcomes from it. So certainly on behalf of those guys, we'd like to thank you and appreciate your time, and hopefully we can see you back here again soon.
Well, thank you for that, but thank you more particularly for the work that you're doing here, because it's easy to send financial support. The hardest thing is getting here and having people on the ground who are committed as you guys are, so that's very important. Thank you.
Okay, so it's time we had our weekly delve into the mailbag and come up with a couple of questions. Of course, the best question of the week, which is sent in by a listener, wins a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. You can send in your questions in numerous ways, and we'll tell you how to do that at the end of the show. But Berners, you've got the two questions vying for the prize. So what are those questions?
Indeed. First question is very slippery. It comes in from Ramesh, and it's all about catching. He fields at first slip, and he's been saying that the bowlers in his level of cricket bowl at a decent pace, and the carry comes through to the keeper. They're having a lot of trouble playing the bowlers. They've got a good attack and they happen to be getting a few nicky-nickies. But unfortunately, these are going between the keeper and the slip. So it sounds like they've got a bit of a spacing issue there. And he's just saying that they've missed two or three chances in along the way. So just what do we recommend with the old slip catching processes, and are there any tips or tricks we could pass on?
Yeah, well, probably the first thing that you want to look at is how far apart the slip and the keeper is standing, because if the first slip is standing very wide and he's standing wider than you would traditionally think that he would stand, and he's not doing that for a specific tactical reason, then yeah, there's going to be a little bit of a gap there, and the keeper's going to have to do a lot more work. And perhaps if he's the type of keeper who doesn't like to go for those because he imagines that the first slip's going to go for it, then yeah, you could be having a problem there. So the first thing I would look at is make sure that you're, unless you've got a very tactical reason to do otherwise, make sure that you're standing in an orthodox first slip position. So if the ball is coming to you, then you can just catch it straight away rather than having to move to your left or rely on the keeper to move to his right to take that catch.
There's a school of thought that goes the other way on that, and I'm not saying it's right, but if you have people too close together, then that creates indecision because two people can think the other person's going for it. Whereas if you have them wider, then it makes the decision for you that you have to go. So as a keeper, for example, and keeper's been referenced here, if I was keeping wicket and I had my slip at 1.5, 2, then anything that would normally go to 1 has got to be mine. So that makes the decision for me. So often you see people standing too close together that causes indecision, as opposed to being too far apart, which makes the decision for the keeper has to go for that ball that goes in the middle. The general trend is to have them a bit wider, isn't it, to increase your coverage. And, I think it is a trend. I don't necessarily think there's anything particularly about it that really stacks up that you have to have it that way. But I would always have mine a bit wider, actually, because I felt that if I had them a bit wider, then I knew that the nick that would normally go to first slip was mine, and it made my decision for me. So that was very much my thing. And you'd often find me, I had a guy called Raj Maru, who was my first slipper at Hampshire. I'd be constantly pushing him wider because he always wanted to tuck in. And that tuck in would make me indecisive about whose ball it was. So I wanted to clear him out of the equation and increase our coverage with him at first slip. And sometimes Paul Terry, who was a fantastic slip fielder at second slip. So we'd increase our coverage, and I felt that it helped my decision making by having him wider.
And confidence is a big part of that, isn't it? Because if you're at first slip and you know that the keeper, I mean, the general sort of maxim is go to the right, isn't it? So if you're at first slip or you're the keeper and you know what balls you're going to go for and what ones you're going to leave, then because you know it's going to go to the first slip, then you're going to not be both be leaving it at the same time. And I think that's just a matter of getting down to doing some practice, getting some nicking practice and working out what the position is that you're both going to be standing in and what balls that you're both going to be going for. I'm as a keeper myself as well, I know that whoever's standing at first slip is one of a couple of guys standing at first slip for me. I know exactly which ones to go for and which ones to not go for. And the first slip knows that sometimes I'll dive in front of him and go for ones which maybe are going to him. But he knows that I'm going to go for it as well. And I think if you're both aware of that, then you're not going to both leave it, which is where the problems occur.
I hate fielding at slip. I never know where to look. It's flying at you all angles, isn't it?
Well, that's where we talked about it last week, wasn't it? That, you know, if you work out where your visual focus is better, then you do know where to look, and you just keep doing that. So it's whether you watch the ball all the way from the hand or whether you watch the edge of the bat, depending on whether you're a narrow focus or a broader one.
Gareth?
Yeah?
Mid-on causes me enough problems.
Well, maybe you're beyond repair, mate.
But it is funny how people do prefer different positions. We have a guy who loves fielding in the gully, but he despises fielding at first or second slip. He does anything he can to avoid it. So sometimes we have a situation because he's so unconfident in the slips that we'll have a gully but no slips, purely because he feels like he's not going to do any good at first. but if we want someone in close, so he'll just stay in the gully. So it just it's a lot about confidence fielding in the slips, and once you've got that confidence, then you're away to go. What's the next question, Berners?
The next question is from Jonty, and he's a fast medium bowler, and he's been reading our guide on getting big 5-wicket hauls, but they just don't seem to work for him. Nightmare. He's played about 20 club matches and a couple of matches for his college, but he just can't get over the line with that elusive fifer. Plenty of threefers, and I think he's even had a fourfer, but he just wants that golden five. He wants to be up on the board, by the sound of things, old Jonty boy.
Well, I'm intrigued about what the guide is on getting 5-wicket hauls. That'd be my first point, because that sounds like an exceptional guide. So I've read that one. So I'd be interested in finding out a bit more about that.
I'll link to it in the show notes.
Yeah, do so. Sometimes it's not easy to get 5-wicket hauls. You know, and I remember back to when around 2004-05. When the England team were very successful with their 4-seam bowlers, and Ashley Giles also bowling as well. And for a while, nobody got 5-wicket hauls because they were sharing the load. So it's not always easy to get 5-wicket hauls when there's five operating. If you're bowling in a 5-man bowling attack, then you're going to reduce the chances that you've got to be able to pick up those 5-wicket hauls. Mm. If you're bowling in a 4-man attack, then yes, the instance of you having to get 5 wickets increases, and that's what we see now with the present England setup, who go with 3 seamers and a spinner, is that people get 5-wicket hauls on a more regular basis because they're bowling more overs effectively and their workload goes up. So it's not always easy to get it. As I say, I've got nothing more to add than that, because until I've read the guide, I'm not going to be understanding how you go about getting 5-wicket hauls.
Well, I think also it's important to not necessarily focus on getting a 5-wicket haul, but you know, just to reduce it to as simple as you can possibly reduce it. You don't want to make it too simple, as I'm paraphrasing Einstein said. You want it as simple as possible, but no simpler. But if you're running up and putting the ball in the right place enough times, then you know you are going to take wickets. There's a debate to be had over where the right place might be for your particular level of bowling, and that's something, Gareth, I know you've looked into quite a lot. Where to pitch the ball and what to do with the ball. But if you've got a plan and you're applying that plan as often as possible, then you are going to end up with 5-wicket hauls if you bowl enough overs. But if you get a 3, you know, get 3 for 37 off your 10 overs, you know, well bowled. You don't need to worry too much about getting that 5. Because some weeks you're going to get you're going to get wickets, and some weeks you're not. But as long as you're bowling in the right place, enough balls in the right place, then you're going to do well. And I think it's maybe that's slightly reductive, but I think you do want to keep bowling as simple as you possibly can.
Well, you can control that process, can't you? Whereas you can't control whether somebody catches 1 inch off the ground at cover, and you can't control whether the umpire sticks his finger up when it's hit the bloke outside the line of off stump, you know. So all you can do is just concentrate on getting the ball, as you say, in the right areas. And the rule of thumb as a seamer would be that your instance of getting wickets increases the further up you pitch the ball, because you bring more modes of dismissal into play. An example of that would be Andrew Flintoff, who was a world-class bowler. I don't think anybody would ever dispute that, and he was a very feared bowler, but yet because he bowled back of the length and therefore took the stumps out of play a lot of the time, his wicket taking impact was lessened, and as a result he averaged 30 plus with the ball, when actually if you think about him as a bowler, he was a low 20s bowler, or should have been. But he didn't pitch the ball up enough. So if you look at all of the high wicket takers for seam bowlers and swing bowlers, generally they're the guys that get the ball up and get people driving, or at least bringing the batter forward on a regular basis, and then mix up a bouncer every now and again to try and upset footwork. So if I'm a seamer, then I certainly encourage my seamers to pitch a ball up, but also to have that option of creating a bit of disruption in the brain and decision making by mixing the pace up and mixing bouncers up every now and again. But predominantly, wickets come from full.
And there's also a case for looking at who you're bowling with as well, because we've talked about in previous shows, bowling in partnerships, bowling in packs, you know, what's happening at the other end as well. You know, if there's pressure being built at the other end, then that's going to help you to take wickets. I think I've mentioned it before. We had a season with two spinners in my club side, and one of the spinners had a brilliant season. Just control, flight, dip, all the things that you'd want from an attacking spinner. And he took wickets, but he didn't take anywhere near the number of wickets that the guy at the other end took, who was a bit more of a traditional club spinner, threw it up a little bit more, didn't turn it a lot. And he got a lot more wickets because everything was so tight at the other end that the batsman thought, oh, this is my chance against what they perceived as the lesser bowler. And he ended up getting more wickets and was our player of the season. So it just goes to show what's happening at the other end is also an important factor in taking a 5-wicket haul for you.
No, I agree.
Okay, so Gareth has got his soapbox from the cupboard, and he's clambering up on it because he's got a minute to talk about just about anything that he likes, as long as it's got something to do with cricket. So, Gareth, over to you. Your minute starts now.
I'm going to talk about delivery skills today. And as a coach, I think delivery skills are really important. When I talk about delivery skills, I mean the ability to do throwdowns well, the ability to use a sidearm well, the ability to do underarm feeds, the ability to hit all flat catches, the ability to nix, which we've talked about in the show in terms of slip fielding, the ability to hit flat catches from the middle of the ground to the boundary fence, to hit balls that go over the top of people's shoulders so they can run back and catch. We can't expect our cricketers to be able to increase their skills massively and to form out in the middle and pull off catches and pull off great shots unless we can actually put them under pressure and deliver skills, our own skills into play to make them practice at a really heightened level. So it's something I always work on with coaches that I work with. I assess how they are at their delivery skills, because all the information in the world is fantastic. But once you can deliver challenging practices, the players aren't going to get there.
All right, that is the end of the show for this week. Before we head off back into the various parts of the internet that we live, we've got a couple of things that we need to sort out, including our competition winner this week, the best question of the week, which is a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And if you want to find out more about those online coaching courses, streaming videos, worksheets, audio, articles, exclusive articles, things that you can't get anywhere else, then head over to pitchvision.com/cricket-coaching, and you can see them all there. There's the likes of Kevin Peterson and all kinds of superstar names like JP Duminy in there, and also sort of tucked away at the back somewhere myself. I've got a couple of little things going on there too, so there's plenty to choose from. So Gareth, which question did you prefer this week? Ramesh's question about slip catching and keeping, or Jonty's question about taking 5 wickets?
Jonty's question this week was my favourite. I thought they were both good, as they are most weeks. But Jonty's one got us going again, didn't it? And it got us talking about different approaches, having bowlers bowling at different ends and building pressure as a partnership and a pair. But also to, you know, to manage your expectations as well. And just looking back at the question again, Jonty talks about he's always got 2 wickets as opposed to any more than that. So maybe his 5-for becomes a 3-for to start off with. And so that's the goal that I'm going to set Jonty, is as well as giving him one of these courses, we're going to give him a challenge of getting 3 wickets.
Absolutely, and there's plenty of courses for fast bowlers on Pitch Vision Academy. So you can choose perhaps one, Andy Caddick, which he talks about consistency of line and length and getting that ball to swing away a little bit. Or there's Ian Ponce, one about bowling quick or bowling in 20-20 matches. So there's lots of choices there. So Jonty, take your pick and then see if you can get up to that 3-wicket haul that Gareth has been talking about first of all before we move on. Berners, if somebody wanted to send in their own question, get it answered and have a chance of winning an online coaching course, what would they need to do?
They can drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com or drop us a line, the number 020 88 167 691.
You can also get us on Twitter at PV Cricket Coach, and you can find us on Facebook. If you do a search for Pitch Fishing Academy, you'll see us there. You can listen to the show every single week. We do one every week. I don't know if you noticed. But if you don't want to keep checking back, which I can understand, then you can subscribe in iTunes. If you go over to iTunes, do a search for Pitch Fishing Academy, hit the subscribe button. All the magic will put things onto your iPod straight away. If you don't want to use iTunes, head over to pitchvision.com/podcasts or pitchvision.com/academy. It's up to you. Click on the podcast link. You'll see the RSS field details there, so you can stick them into whatever other device that you have. Now, we have a tail ender which came from our Facebook this week. It was from our good friend, our good lurker on Facebook, Simon Jones. Not that one.
No, that one, the Hampshire one.
The Hampshire one, yeah. So thanks again, Simon. It was a variation on Berners' hose pipe, which is aerosol for the bowler who sprays it around.
Yeah,
and the other one, which I didn't quite understand fully when you would use it, is Sky Plus, which if you're not in a part of the world with a Sky Plus, it's one of these digital video recorders where you can pause live telly or rewind it, do that kind of thing, and it's used when a batsman repeats a shot, either good or bad. But I'm not sure when you'd use that.
Yeah, I don't know when you'd use it, but I can understand where it comes from.
Yeah, but Berners, what would you be shouting Sky Plus anytime?
Himself, mostly.
Plus it. Plus it. He's playing the hoik over mid wicket again. My batteries are going to wear out on my controller.
rewind.
Yeah,
or fast forward so you get to the end of the inning.
Simple-minded person, me.
That's all for this week. So until next time, we'll see you next week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Berners.
Cheers, lads.
Cheers, guys.